Before I pass the mic to Sally Susila for her talk, let me give a brief introduction about the Venerable Sally. Venerable Sally obtained a degree in mass communication USM and was ordained as a Theravada Buddhist nun in the Burmese tradition in the age of 28. 6 months after her ordination in 1991, she practiced intensively in Myanmar for nearly 3 years under the guidance of Venerable U Pandita Sayadaw. In 1994, Venerable Sayale placed herself under the guidance of Venerable Pa'ao Sayadaw, where she also learned Abhidharma, ancient discourses, and the Pali language. Meanwhile, she became his English to Chinese interpreter. She also practiced different meditation methods, such as those taught by Sui O Min Sayadaw, Mogok Sayadaw, and Sayagi Ubakin. As a result, Venerable Sayale has become an unusually accomplished teacher, able to present the subtleties of the Buddha's teachings in a simple and direct way. Venerable Sayale has traveled extensively abroad as a meditation and Dharma teacher. She speaks fluent Chinese, English, Burmese, and Hokkien and Malay. So without further ado, I pass the mic to Sayale Susila.
Have you taken the 5 precepts? Yes, okay. Samanta chakkhavalesu atra gacchantu devata sadhammam muni rajasa sunantu sagamokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda dhamma savana kalo ayam badanda. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammaha sambuddhassa. Okay, so today I would like to share with you one very important sutta called Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first discourse of the Buddha after his enlightenment. Since it's the first discourse, it must be very important. So this discourse setting the wheel of Dhamma in motion, or Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, was preached to the 5 ascetics. These 5 ascetics follow him before he become enlightened, before he become Buddha. After Prince Siddhartha renounced the world and practiced it in Uruvela, these 5 ascetics, these 5 ascetics follow him for 6 years. So at that time, the Prince Siddhartha practiced self-mortification, torturing his own body. Because at that time, in the culture of Hindu or culture of India, they thought, they misunderstand all the defilements come from the body. So they think they should torture the body to get oneself away from the sensual pleasures. So, Prince Siddhartha also, believed in this wrong view. Then he practiced 6 years self-mortification. After 6 years, he felt that this practice is painful, very painful, and ignoble, unprofitable. Therefore, he decided to give up this practice and accepted the offering of rice milk from Sujata. So when he started, when he resumed the meal and the five followers thought he had given up the struggle for Buddhahood. And these five monks left him. And without these five monks, Buddha went to Bodhgaya, sit under the Bodhi tree, and try diligently with his perseverance, effort, and wisdom, he realized enlightenment and achieved the stage of Samma Sambuddha. After his attainment, he thought, this Dhamma is so profound. What I have experienced is so profound. If I preach to other people, people cannot understand. It will be very tired for me. Why not? I don't preach. So he has no intention to preach, simply because the Dhamma is so profound, it's beyond other people's understanding. So at that time, Sahapati Brahma know his mind. Then using his psychic power, he came down and spoke to the Buddha. He said, Venerable Sir, in this world, there are some people only have a little dust in the eyes. Only little dust in the eyes. If they have the chance to listen to your Dhamma, they will soon get enlightened. So out of compassion for this person who has little dust in their eyes, please preach the Dhamma. So finally, Buddha accepted. And Buddha start to think, whom should I preach first? First, he thought of his two teachers, Alala and Udaka. However, both of them had already passed away. Then Buddha said, what a loss. Then he think again, who else should I preach? Then he thought of these five followers. We call Pancha Wagiye Bhikkhu. Before that, they not yet become Bhikkhu. No Sangha yet. So these five ascetics. Therefore, then he walked to these five ascetics and started this setting the wheel of Dhamma in motion. And when this discourse was preached, the whole world shook. The discourse shot up to the heaven, to the Brahma world, because it's the first discourse. And after this discourse, the teaching of the Buddha start to spread out. So, this is not a simple discourse, and don't expect for jokes. Okay? Listen attentively, respectfully, and seriously. Don't expect joke. Okay? Okay. So, the discourse started. I have heard that on one occasion, the Blessed One was staying at Varanasi in the Game Refuge at Isipatana. There he addressed the group of five monks. There are these two extremes. They are not to be indulged in by one who has gone forth. So for any monastic, must be careful of these two extremes. What are the two? That which is devoted to sensual pleasures with reference to sensual objects. Base, vulgar, common, ignoble, unprofitable. So first, Buddha said, you should, for those who go forth, should avoid and indulge in sensual pleasures, because it is non-profitable, ignoble. And Buddha himself, before he became enlightened, he also indulged in sensual pleasures in palace. He is the prince. So throughout his years, he indulged in sensual pleasures, and he himself understand the more he enjoys sensual pleasures, the more greedy he becomes. The more lustful he becomes. Then he realized, indulging in sensual pleasures is very base. It's practiced by common folk, common people. Not by me, Bodhisattva, who is going to become Buddha. So, from his own experience, he know, indulging in sensual pleasure is very unprofitable, no benefit at all. Similarly, for lay person, you can indulge, but minimum. Don't go up to maximum. Otherwise, you become more and more greedy and become far away from liberation. Okay. Then Buddha said, there's also another extreme that one should avoid. That which is devoted to self-affliction, self-mortification. And this self-mortification he practiced 6 years. So he know it is very painful. He said, very, very painful and ignoble. Ignoble means it's not practiced by the noble one. And unprofitable. You torture yourself, and full of suffering, and yet not benefit at all. So Buddha said, avoiding both of these extremes, the middle way, realized by the Tathagata, producing vision, producing knowledge, leads to calm, to direct knowledge, to self-awakening, to unbinding. Unbinding means Nibbana. So as a practitioner, both you and me have to avoid two extremes. The first one is what? Indulging in sensual pleasures. Second one, avoid self-mortification or self-affliction. But walk middle path. Walk the middle path. And this middle path can produce vision, can lead you to come to Nibbana. So what are this middle path? And what is the middle path realized by the Tathagata that producing vision, knowledge, leads to come, to direct knowledge, to self-awakening, to unbinding? Precisely this Noble Eightfold Path. Everybody knows the Noble Eightfold Path. But I think many those they know the Noble Eightfold Path, they do not know in detail. I can check with you by asking you a question. Okay, what are the Noble Eightfold Path? I think most people can recite by heart, can learn by heart. First, right view, right thought. Some more, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Okay, what's right view? What's right view? This Noble Eightfold Path is the middle path. When you walk this path, then this path will produce vision, knowledge, calm, and this path will lead you to enlightenment, Nibbana or unbinding. Therefore, you must thoroughly understand this Noble Eightfold Path. So what is the first one? Right view. What's the right view? penetrate or understanding the Four Noble Truths is right view. As a practitioner, you should not forget this point. What is right view? Understanding the Four Noble Truths. And right view among the Noble Eightfold Path, right view come first. Because right view is like the first light in the morning. When the light come, when the first light appear, and the darkness goes away. So when this right view arises, ignorance give way. What is ignorance? Ignorance means not understanding the Four Noble Truths. Ignorance cover the Four Noble Truths. But when right view comes, the first light comes, then ignorance give way and the Four Noble Truths will reveal itself. So what's the right view? Understanding the Four Noble Truths. And not only that, when you're understanding the Four Noble Truths, including cause and effect, you understand the law of karma, you understand the cause and effect, you understand anicca, dukkha, anatta, and so on. And since right view is the first among the Noble Eightfold Path, and when the view is right, the rest are followers. When the view is right, the followers also will be right. When your view is wrong, the seven followers also will be wrong. Therefore, right view, right view plays very important role. According to my experience, teaching experience, I myself feel that the Malaysian Buddhists lacking two important things. What do you think? The Malaysian Buddhists lacking two important things. What do you think you are lacking of? Or you think you understand all? First is right view. In order to get right view, what should you do? The first important one, listen to Dhamma talk. And precisely, I feel that Malaysian don't like to listen to Dhamma talk. So how can they establish right view? And listen to Dhamma talk also, you must listen to the serious one, correct one. Not go for entertainment. Some teacher give talk just to entertain students, make them laugh. After the Dhamma talk, when people ask you, what is the speaker talk about? I don't know. I just laugh. That's all. If you choose such type of teacher, your Dhamma will never progress. I tell you very frankly. Okay? Because I have been traveling to USA. Many people feedback to me. Most of the speakers just make the audience laugh. After that, they also feel very happy laughing. Yeah? But after that, don't know anything. It seems like you go to movie, laugh, then come out, don't know anything. Right? So as a devoted Buddhist, you have to choose correct talk, serious talk. The talk can deepen your knowledge. The talk can let you understand the suffering of five aggregates. So, by not listening to correct talk, serious talk, insightful talk, then we cannot develop right view. So this one thing I feel that missing in Malaysian Buddhists. The second one is mindfulness. Mindfulness. Right view equal to wisdom. The second one I feel missing in practicing Buddhist is mindfulness. Because lacking in mindfulness, the mind is not clear. The mind is very unclear. When I associate with people, I know whether their mind is clear or not. Okay, so I hope, I am also Malaysian. Yeah? I wish that we cultivate right view so that we will not be misled by other people. Misled, especially by those who are teaching wrong method. So how you can know whether people are teaching correct or wrong? Unless you have right view. Otherwise, you will never know. So first, by choosing a correct talk, correct teacher. Secondly, if you cannot distinguish who is the correct talk and who is the correct teacher teaching the correct Dharma, you yourself go and study Sutta. All the Suttas. Majjhima Nikaya, Samyutta Nikaya, Anguttara Nikaya, Dikha Nikaya. Then you will know. After you endowed with all this knowledge, then you are able to distinguish who is the correct teacher teaching the correct Dharma. Buddha in one of the Sutta make a statement. He said, he asked his disciple, who is the true speaker? How you answer? Who is the true speaker? How you answer? And Buddha answer himself. If everybody keeps silent, mean everybody don't know. So Buddha answer himself. Any speaker, when he gives a talk, can arouse people's disenchantment. Can arouse people's disenchantment towards the five aggregate, towards mind and body, and have the desire for liberation. Such speaker is true speaker. So not for entertaining, not to make you laugh. Okay. Come back to the Noble Eightfold Path. So this Noble Eightfold Path produce vision. I will talk a little bit later. We will come to this part again. And this Noble Eightfold Path is the middle way realized by the Tathagata that producing vision, knowledge, leads to come, to direct knowledge, to self-awakening, to unbinding or Nibbana. And later on, Buddha explained the Four Noble Truths, the action of Buddha's teaching. As a practitioner, you must fully understand the Four Noble Truths. It's the most important teaching of the Buddha. Now, this monk is the noble truth of suffering or noble truth of stress. Birth is stressful, aging is stressful, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, distress, and despair are stressful. Association with the unbeloved one is stressful. Separation from the beloved from the loved one is stressful. Not getting what is wanted is stressful. All these are easy to understand. Your own experience, aging, sickness, and death are suffering. Everybody know. And because of aging, sickness, and death exist in the world, therefore Buddha appear in the world. If there is no aging, sickness, and death, Buddha does not. It's not necessary for Buddha to appear in the world. Okay. So among all this noble truth of suffering, the last one is the most important one. In short, the five clinging aggregates are stressful. Okay. Why? The five clinging aggregates are stressful. Why Buddha say so? If you are a good practitioner, you should be able to answer. Simply because these five aggregates are impermanent. Because five aggregates are impermanent. Therefore, they are suffering. They are stressful. What are the five aggregates? Number one, form aggregate. Second one, feeling aggregate. Perception aggregate. Formation aggregate. And last, consciousness aggregate. These five aggregates are subject to clinging. Do we cling to our body? Let's say form aggregate. Form aggregate consists of four elements. Body is only concept. What actually exists in the body is four elements. What are the four? Earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. These four elements in the body change very often. So one time you feel hot, another time you feel cold. One time you feel body very light, another time you feel very heavy. One time you feel your body vibrate, another time you feel your body still. So the four elements in the body are changing all the time. And you cannot control them. You cannot control your body. Don't be hot, be cold only. Or don't be cold, be hot only. No. The Dharma is working on its own. So you have no control over your body, your four elements. Therefore, it's also one type of suffering. Similarly, feeling. You cannot only expect pleasant feeling. We have three types of feeling. Pleasant, unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. All human beings love pleasant feeling. However, even within a day, you can't have pleasant feeling throughout the day. Not possible. Why is not possible? Why is not possible? Because it is produced by cause and conditions. Because this pleasant feeling is produced by cause and condition, and the cause and condition is beyond your control. Therefore, feeling is also suffering. We want to have pleasant feeling all the time, but we can't have it. And even the pleasant feeling we have, very soon it changes. It changes. From the pleasant feeling change to unpleasant one. And the perception. What's the perception? Perception means there are two meanings of perception. One is to recognize. Perception recognize the feature of an object. Let's say when you first see the bird flying in the sky, so you can recognize it by way of what? By way of bird's special feature, got two wings flying in the sky. So perception perceives the special feature of the birds, and later on, perception can remember. So perception marking, make a mark, then in order to remember, to recognize. This is the perception. However, we, as an ordinary person, we perceive whatever we see, we hear, we taste, we touch, we think as what? Permanent, happiness, self. From a long time ago, along the samsara, we have been perceiving in this way. And since we are born, when the milk, mother's milk, come to contact with your tongue, how the baby perceive? What do you think how he perceive? Pleasant, right? When he cry, then the mom give the milk and he stop crying because so pleasant already. So he perceive what he taste, what he hear, all pleasant. So when you perceive it as pleasant, you also think it is permanent. No one want the present thing to change. So we also perceive it as permanent. Then further, we perceive what is permanent happiness is experienced by the self, by a permanent self. A self is experienced what is pleasant and what is permanent. Therefore, we, from a very long time, we have been perceiving wrongly. We perceive everything is pleasant, permanent, and having a self. But what Buddha perceives? How Buddha perceives? The enlightened person perceives different from the ordinary person. The enlightened person perceives whatever he sees, hears, tastes, smells, touch, and think are all impermanent, are all illusion, not real, are suffering and governed by causal relationship, not by I, not by me, not by myself, but governed by cause and effect. Okay, it's called perception. Then the formation consciousness, formation, the head of formation is cetana, volition, cetana. Cetana is the head of volition. Volition means karma. So cetana, volition, responsible for making karma. And this also change. Sometimes we perform good karma, sometimes we perform bad karma. So our volition sometimes good, sometimes bad. It's also changing all the time. And consciousness change even faster because Buddha compare consciousness as magician. Magician will create some magic. Let's say a unreal goal. The magician will change it to become real, then you believe it. Similarly, our thoughts, all types of thoughts are self-created, not real one. But every time when the thought arises, we believe it. Let's say a fear arises in you. You believe the fear is real. When you believe the fear is real, then you get very frightened, thinking this, thinking that. Fear of nothing. You don't know what you fear of. Right? Simply because you believe it as real. Buddha say, now this consciousness like magician. It can turn the unreal to the real one. So the mind is also like magician. So whatever arises in the mind, this magician will turn it from the unreal to the real one. And you believe in it. Therefore, you suffer from it. You suffer accordingly. Whatever thoughts arise in you, you believe in it, then you suffer accordingly. All the anxiety, worry, fear, all are illusion. It's just a thought. Created by who? By yourself. Created by your mind. And your mind is like magician. Your mind turn the unreal to real. And if you believe your thought, you suffer accordingly. And you cannot let go of it. Therefore, I write many articles. Don't trust your thought. Another article, you make your thought real. In fact, it's unreal, but you grasp it. You don't want to let go of it. Therefore, it becomes real. So the best antidote to overcome it is by way of contemplation of impermanent. Whatever thoughts arise, just contemplate impermanent, just a state, a mental state, not myself. Then easily you can let go of the mental refinement. Okay, so these are the five aggregates. And these five aggregates are stressful because they keep on changing. And the change is beyond your control. Therefore, they are stressful. Okay, the second one, Buddha said, monks, this is the noble truth of the origination of stress. The craving that makes for further becoming, accompanied by passion and delight, relishing now, here, and now there. Craving for sensual pleasure, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming. So after explain the noble truth, Buddha said, five aggregates are subject to, five aggregates of clinging is the truth of suffering. And Buddha further tell us, what is the origin of this suffering? Craving. Buddha said craving. And there are three types of craving. The first one is called craving for sensual pleasure. Craving for sensual pleasure connected with the six sense spaces. The eye always want to see beautiful object. This is called craving for sensual visible object. The ear always want to hear sweet sound. And the ear crave for pleasure, sweet sound. And the nose always want to smell fragrance. And the tongues always want to taste delicious food. And the body always want to touch soft opposite sex touch or the soft touch. And the mind always want to think. Without thinking cannot survive. Always want to think, always want to worry, always want to plan or recollect the future, recollect the past and planning for future. Without thinking, cannot find the self. Must think in order to let you feel this, the self is exist. So this called craving for sensual pleasures. Thinking, daydreaming is also very pleasant one. Daydreaming, nobody can control you. You can dream whatever you want. Isn't that very pleasant? Now I don't have big car. I can dream I have Mercedes. I only have one wife. Oh, I think I have six wives. So we can do daydreaming, no problem. So it's very pleasant also. This is called indulging in sensual pleasures. Okay. So this is called the first, craving for sensual pleasures. The second, craving for becoming. Craving for becoming is also very deep-rooted in our mind. When I went to China, because China's most of them are Mahayana background, So Mahayana background, they inspired to become Buddhahood. So one day, but now as Theravada gradually go into China, so now they start to have this Theravada's belief teaching. And they know this arahant. The practice of most people, the purpose of practice is to achieve liberation, to become arahant. But they really don't understand after become arahant, where arahant goes. They don't really understand. So one day they asked me, when arahant die, pass away, where arahant goes? Then I give him the answer. I cannot directly give him the answer. So I give a simile. Suppose a fire is burning. Depend on the wood. Burning. Then Buddha asks. Buddha asks a person. Because the person asks him. After Arahant, where he goes. And Buddha give a simile. He said that when fire is burning, do you know fire is burning? Yes or no? Yeah. Then why the fire burns? Because depend on the wood. Okay. Then when fire extinguish, do you know fire extinguish? Yes. Why fire extinguish? No more wood. Yes, correct. Okay. So after fire extinguish, where the fire goes? Where the fire goes? Then Buddha said, where the fire goes? Buddha asked, can we say the fire goes to the north, to the east, to the west, to the south? And the one who asked said no. Then Buddha said, where does it go? Then the one answer, to say where it goes is not applicable. Why? Because fire exists depend on the wood. When there's no more wood, fire just extinguished, that's all. To say it goes to west, to south, to north, to east is not applicable. Buddha said, you already answered my question. Right? So I give a simile to this person. And this person still not satisfied. So he said that, you mean that when Arahan die, no more? Right? No more. I said, yes. Then she told me, then I don't want to practice anymore. From her answer, then we start to understand. This is called craving for becoming. Craving for existence, craving for becoming is such a strong craving that's deeply rooted in your mind. The moment you know after Arahan no more, stop practicing because you want to come again and again. Okay? I think some of them also get frightened already. I must go back and think whether I want Arahan or not. The moment you think of such question, you should understand this is called craving for existence, craving for becoming. When there is birth, there is aging, sickness, death. No one can escape from it. Do you want aging, sickness, and death? Don't want. Nobody want, right? If you don't want aging, sickness, and death, then you should not crave for birth. You should not crave for birth. If you still crave for birth, you should expect aging, sickness, and death. That's very fair. Okay? The soul is called craving for becoming. And craving for becoming is accompanied with wrong view of eternalism. Because you crave for existence, you crave for next life to come back again. You think the next life, the person, is the same as the present life, myself. You think it's the same person, transmigrate from one life to another life. Therefore, craving for becoming is associated with wrong view of eternalism. If next life is nothing to do with me, what should I crave for? Right? Because you think next life, the person who reborn you is the same person as you now. Therefore, you crave for becoming. So it's associated with wrong view of eternalism. Okay. The next, craving for non-becoming. Craving for non-becoming, as a Buddhist, usually we don't have this type of craving because we understand as long as there's craving and ignorance, the rebirth will continue. So we don't have this type of craving, craving for non-becoming. Craving for non-becoming is associated with wrong view of annihilation. This person think that after death, nothing exists, no more. This is called annihilation, wrong view of annihilation. Okay, so this craving is the noble truth of the origin of suffering. The noble truth of suffering and the noble truth of the origin of the suffering, these two are the object of vipassana meditation. When we practice insight meditation, we should tackle five aggregate. See five aggregate as impermanent, suffering, and non-self. Not enough yet. We also must understand why the five aggregate comes. Five aggregates mean mind and body. So why mind and body, mind and body arise in this present life? Why? Nothing arises without cause, right? So why the five aggregate arise in this present lifetime? Because of the craving in the past. In the past life, we crave. It's called craving for assistance. In the past life, we crave for assistance, then we perform wholesome karma. We do dana, sila, bhavana, we perform wholesome karma, and when that wholesome karma is performed, it leaves behind karmic energy. When that karmic energy meet with favorable condition, then the five aggregates are produced in this very life. Therefore, if a person inspired to be liberated from the realm of rebirth, he should tackle this craving. Because it's the origin of suffering. So, whenever you feel this craving arise in you, either from your eyes, ear, nose, tongue, body, you should contemplate it as impermanent, suffering, non-self, and so on, to get rid of that craving. Otherwise, the cycle of rebirth will continue. So, to say it again, to stress it again, the noble truth of suffering and the origin of the suffering are the objects of insight meditation. Now we come to the noble truth. And this monk is the noble truth of the cessation of stress, the remainderness, fading and cessation, renunciation, relinquishment, release, and letting go of that very craving. Since the craving is the origin of suffering, then what is the cessation of the suffering? The letting go of that craving. Letting go of that craving is the cessation of all suffering. Therefore, whatever craving arises in you, just note impermanent, and let go of it. Every time when it arises, note it impermanent, not self, suffering. Let go of it from moment to moment. Then your craving become thinner. And when your wisdom reach maturity, one noting, pack, you will see Nibbana. Okay? Now come to the fourth one. And this monk is a noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress. Precisely, this noble eightfold path. We already mentioned this eight. And I have already told you, number one, right view. Now, I want to continue. The second one, right thought. What is the right thought? Samma sangappa. What is the right thought? There are three. The thought of renunciation, the thought of non-ill will, the thought of non-cruelty. These are three we call right thought. For example, when you enter into jhana, this is called the thought of renunciation. Renounce from sensual pleasures. Renunciation doesn't mean that you become monk and nun. Even you become monk and nun, still crave for food, crave for robes, crave for this, crave for that. It's no thought of renunciation. It's only form, renunciation of form, but not from the mind. So the thought of renunciation means renounce the enjoyment from sensual pleasures. And when you enter into jhana, the mind is renounced from enjoyment from sensual pleasures. Okay. The thought of non-ill will. How to achieve the thought of non-ill will? By cultivating loving kindness meditation. And the thought of non-cruelty, how to achieve it? By cultivating compassion meditation. Okay, so these two, right view and right thought, consist of wisdom training. The next, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. These three are easy to understand. I don't have time to explain to you. You can read the book. The next one, right effort. Right effort is very important. What are the right effort? What is the right effort here? There are four types of right effort. Number one, the effort to prevent. the effort to prevent evil from arising. This is very important, huh? The effort to prevent the evil from arising. How to prevent? How to prevent the mind so that the evil will not arise? Mindfulness, yes, mindfulness. For example, when you go one place to another place, you can mindful of your breath or can mindful of your touch. It just keep your mind at one object. Huh? When your mind keep at one object, then the evil cannot arise in your mind. But unfortunately, sometimes because of lapse of mindfulness, lapse of mindfulness, then the evil come in, the evil thought come into the mind. At that time, you also must have effort to abandon, to get rid of that evil thought. How to get rid of that evil thought? All these are in my book because I don't have time to explain to you one by one. You can read my book, The Four Types of Effort. I explain to you when evil arise, sensual desire arise, how to get rid of it. When anger arise, how to get rid of it. When jealousy arise, how to get rid of it. This is called effort. You don't entertain your evil thought. If you entertain it, follow it, then you are a person who has no, you are the person who have no effort. Okay? So effort doesn't mean that you sit on the cushion 3 hours, 4 hours. Other people sit only 1 hour. I have more effort than him. But when the evil arises in you, you entertain it. Those who sit 1 hour fight with it and abandon it. So he has more effort than you. Right? Effort doesn't mean sit on the cushion only. Doesn't mean that you practice 3 hours only. No. From every moment, whenever there's evil in you, you arouse your effort to abandon it. This is called a person who has right effort. And the third one, the effort to arouse the wholesome which has not yet arisen yet. For example, some of you may not have meditation, may not join any meditation before. You must arouse your effort to start, to arouse that desire to go for a meditation retreat and so on. This is called effort to arouse the wholesome who has not yet arisen in your heart, in your mind. Okay. And the last one, when the effort has arisen, the wholesome thing, let's say you never try samatha before, samatha meditation before. Now you arouse your effort to join the retreat, Anapanasati retreat. Then after that, you also must arouse another effort to bring your meditation to perfection. Don't stop short. Just having the effort to arouse the wholesome which has not arisen, but no effort to continue. No effort to bring the meditation to fulfillment. So the last effort is to bring the wholesome to perfection. So these are the four types of effort. Right effort. Next one. Right mindfulness. What's right mindfulness? There are four. Satipatthana Sutta. Four foundation of mindfulness. What are the four? Body, contemplation, kaya, Nupasana Satipatthana, body contemplation. Number two, feeling. Vedana Nupasana Satipatthana, contemplation of feeling. Therefore, just now I mentioned, we have three types of feeling, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So whenever this feeling arises, contemplate it. Mindful of it. Then later on, contemplate it as impermanent suffering and non-self. Next one. Citta Nupasana Satipatthana, contemplation of mind. Just now I mentioned, when the craving arises in your mind, craving is a mental state. It's a mind. It's a mental state. So you contemplate craving as impermanent, suffering, non-self, then this is called Citta Nupassana Satipatthana, contemplation of the mind. And last one, Dhamma Nupassana Satipatthana. Among, we have five subjects under contemplation of Dhamma. And the Four Noble Truths is one of them. Okay? I have this talk about Four Foundations of Mindfulness. You can go to my website and listen. And last one, right concentration. Right concentration in the Sutta, Buddha mentioned, right concentration is first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and fourth jhana. But in the Visuddhimagga, Visuddhimagga say, assess concentration before jhana. Assess concentration, and first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, up to immaterial jhana. All these are called assess. All these are called right concentration. So these are the Noble Eightfold Path. When you walk the Dhamma, from time to time, you must check whether you are fulfilling this Noble Eightfold Path or not. When your meditation gets stuck, not progressing, sometimes you have to check this Noble Eightfold Path. Do you fulfill this Noble Eightfold Path? If you have fulfilled all the Noble Eightfold Path, you are certain to make progress. But sometimes one or two are missing. Two or three are missing, therefore your progress is slow. So this Noble Eightfold Path is your mirror for you to reflect whether you are walking completely or not, or you are missing few path factors. Understand? Okay, so Buddha finished the Four Noble Truths already. Then come to the most important point. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. What are the things he never heard? Buddha never heard. Number one, this is the noble truth of stress. To us, for Buddha, now we are so lucky. We have been exposed to this noble truth of suffering many times, again and again. But to Buddha, never heard before. The first time he heard. So this is the noble truth of suffering, noble truth of stress. This is the first point. Second point, this noble truth of stress is to be comprehended. Okay. What is the noble truth of suffering? What is the noble truth of stress? You must be able to answer. Otherwise, how are you going to comprehend? What's the noble truth of suffering? The five aggregates of clinging. Please remember. So first Buddha said, this is the noble truth of stress. Birth, stress, aging, sickness, separation, and so on. Then Buddha said, in short, five aggregates of clinging is the noble truth of stress. So you must understand this theoretically, not yet by direct knowledge. Even if theoretically also you do not understand, how are you going to comprehend the first noble truth? Not possible. Therefore, Dhamma knowledge is very important. Without Dhamma knowledge, I don't know how are you going to comprehend. So listen to talks, reading the sutta is very important. So this is the noble truth of suffering. We understand five aggregates of clinging is the noble truth of suffering. And Buddha further said, this noble truth of stress is to be comprehended. You had to keep on contemplating it again as anicca, dukkha, anatta. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. And the third one, this noble truth of stress has been comprehended. After you keep on comprehend them, it's anicca, dukkha, anatta, again and again, again and again, up to the highest degree, then this noble truth of stress has been fully comprehended. Only the realization of arhatship is possible. So in order to attain arhatship, what should you do first? What should you do? Oh, no one want to become arahant because still cling for life. But if you wish to become arahant, what should you do? First, must understand what is the noble truth of suffering. Secondly, put into practice. First, understanding is only theoretical understanding. Second, put into practice. Keep on comprehend this five aggregate of clinging, which is the noble truth of suffering. Keep on comprehend it until it has been fully comprehended. Only then the path and fruition of arahantship will arise in you. Of course, first from Sotapanna, then Sakadagami, Anagami, up to arahant. This what should you do? This what you should do. Understand? Clear? Okay. Then second one. So when Buddha fully comprehend this the noble truth of suffering, then vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose when he comprehend this noble truth of suffering. And the second one also, vision arose, insight arose, illumination arose when within me, with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of the origination of stress. What is the noble truth of the origination of stress? How you answer? Craving. You should be able to answer. I have explained to you just now. So, craving. So this is the noble truth of the origination of stress, craving. And second, this noble truth of the origination of stress is to be abandoned. Abandon it. Then third, this noble truth of the origination of stress has been abandoned. Without abandon the craving, the life will continue. The cycle of rebirth will continue again and again. So the craving must be abandoned. Okay. The third one, vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of the cessation of stress. What is the noble truth of the cessation of stress? How to answer? Just now I have already explained to you. The letting go of what? Craving. The letting go of craving. Abandoning the craving. The letting go of craving bring to the cessation of all suffering. And this truth, this noble truth of the cessation of stress is to be directly experienced. Mean Nibbana. This cessation of suffering is Nibbana. Only when you give up craving, you will realize Nibbana. And this Nibbana is to be directly experienced. And Buddha say, this noble truth of the cessation of stress has been directly experienced by him. Okay. The last one. Vision arose, insight arose, discernment arose, knowledge arose, illumination arose within me with regard to things never heard before. This is the noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress. What are they? Noble is four paths. You must learn by heart. Don't learn by heart and by echo, learn by heart, noble is for path, for noble truth. Okay? Then this noble truth of the way of practice leading to cessation of stress is to be developed stage by stage. Develop it stage by stage until maturity. Until this Noble Eightfold Path are fully developed. Only then, the realization of Nibbana can be achieved. And Buddha said, this noble truth of the way of practice leading to the cessation of stress has been developed fully. Therefore, now he became Sammasambuddha. He became Arahant and became Sammasambuddha because he has fully developed Noble Eightfold Path. Okay. Then after he become Arahant, then he said, and monks, as long as this knowledge and vision of mine with its three rounds. Okay, what is the three now? What are the three rounds? Let me explain to you. The first one is the noble truth of suffering. Okay? The noble truth of suffering, first round is you must understand what is the noble truth of suffering. What's there? The five aggregates of clinging. Then first round. Second round, the noble truth of suffering must be comprehended. It's to be comprehended. This second round. The third round, the noble truth of stress has been comprehended. So each noble truth has three rounds. Just now I have explained to you. I'm not going to repeat. Okay? Just now I have explained to you already. So each noble truth has three rounds. Then what are the 12 permutations? Since each noble truth has three rounds, so four noble truth, 4 × 3, 12. 12 permutations. So Buddha said, monks, as long as this knowledge and vision of mine, what knowledge? Mean this 3 rounds and 12 permutations. As long as this 3 rounds and 12 permutations, this knowledge concerning four noble truths, as they actually are present, was not pure in me. I did not claim to have directly awakened to the right self-awakening, unexcelled in the cosmos with its devas, maras, and brahmas, with its contemplative and priests, its royalty and common folk. So, as long as Buddha, Prince Siddhartha, the four noble truths, in regard with 3 rounds and 12 permutations are not pure in him, not clear, not pure in him, then he cannot claim he has attained Sammasambuddha. But as soon as this knowledge and vision of mine with its 3 rounds and 12 permutations concerning this four noble truths, as they actually are present, was truly pure. Then I did claim to have directly awakened to the right self-awakening, unexcelled in the cosmos with its devas, maras, brahmas, with its contemplatives and priests, its royalty and common folk. Knowledge and vision arose in me, unprovoked is my release. This is the last birth. When you become Arahant, it's the last birth. There is now no further becoming. No more rebirth for me. No further becoming for me. So Buddha now already become Sammasambuddha. That is what the Blessed One said. Gratified, the group of 5 monks delighted at his words. And while this explanation was being given, they arose to Venerable Kondanya, dustless, stainless Dhamma eye, the eye of Dhamma. Whatever is subject to origination is all subject to cessation. Whatever arises must pass away. Whatever is subject to origination is all subject to cessation. This is called arising and passing away. And Kondanya has become Sotapan. After listening to his talk, first Dhamma talk, first talk given by the Buddha, only Kondanya, only one person in human world becomes Sotapan. But so many Deva become Sotapan. But human world, only one person. And when the Blessed One had set the wheel of the Dhamma in motion, the earth Devas cried out. So when Buddha give talk, not only give talk to human beings, all the Devas, Brahma will come and gather and also listen to the talk. So the earth Deva cried out at Vanarasi, the Game refuge, at Isipatana, the Blessed One has set in motion the unexcelled wheel of Dhamma that cannot be stopped by priests or contemplative Deva, Mara or God or anyone in the cosmos. On hearing the earth Deva's cry, the Deva of the four kings, heaven took up the cry. Then the Deva of the 33, one layer by layer, the message go up to the heaven, layer by layer, layer by layer. Up to where? Up to Brahma world. Up to the Brahma world, the Devas of Brahma's retinue took up the cry. At Vanarasi, in a Game refuge at Isipatana, the Blessed One has set in motion the unexcelled wheel of Dhamma that cannot be stopped by priest or contemplative Deva, Mara or God or anyone at all in the cosmos. So in that moment, that instant, the cry shoot right up to the Brahma worlds. And this 10,000-fold cosmos shiver, quiver and quick, like earthquake, while a great measureless radiance appear in the cosmos, surpassing the radiance of the Devas. You see the power of the Dhamma cause the whole cosmos shake and quick, and the radiant, the power of the Dhamma produced the light. The radiant surpass the radiance of Deva. Then the Blessed One exclaimed, so you really know Kondanya. He spoke to Kondanya because Kondanya already developed the insight and see the arising and passing away. So Buddha said, you really know. Buddha has the psychic power of reading other people's mind. So he know Kondanya understand his Dhamma already. So he say, so you really know Kondanya. So you really know. And that is how Venerable Kondanya acquired the name. Anya Kondanya. Kondanya who knows. So after this discourse, Kondanya become the first person become Arya in the world. In human world. But in Deva, so many Deva become Arya. So Kondanya, among the five Panchavagiya, he's the first person, become Arya. And after that, Buddha continued to preach. After a few days, Buddha preached his second discourse. What's the second discourse? Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. The discourse on the characteristic of non-self. So when Buddha preached this discourse, all the monks, all the five person, not yet monk, all the five person become arahant. All the become arahant, and on that day onward, six arahant in the world. Then Buddha asked them to go different direction to spread the teaching. And the teaching exists up to 2,600 years until now. So we are very fortunate. This discourse has been taught 2,600 years ago, and yet we still have the chance to listen to such precious discourse. So we are very fortunate. We are very fortunate, and we should be happy that we have such good karma to listen to such precious discourse. So this is the end of the discourse. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, any question? In USA, I take 7 hours to finish this discourse. But now, I have to take maybe 1.5 hours, less than 1.5 hours to finish. So it's very tiring for me. If you want to listen the 7 days one, 7 hours one, you go to my website, but I speak in Chinese.